Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Okay, well, welcome everybody to today's Global Marketing Podcast. We have a very experienced marketer on board here today who has done global marketing because I worked with her on some projects. So I am so curious to hear the background and impressions from what she's done. So welcome today, Michelle Seyfried. I am so happy to have you here.
Thanks, Wendy. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So you are the inbound marketing manager for Conitec Sunoco.
You've been there
for about 4 years. And then before that, you've worked in marketing for companies in enterprise software, medical device manufacturing, industrial packaging, inventory management services, and data management services. And you got your BA in communications from North Carolina State University.
That's right. Go back.
And we were just joking about how all this marketing experience and training really helps with parenting, especially in this video world and getting the lighting right. So
That's right. Remote learning is never going to be the same.
It really isn't. It isn't. So it cracks me up that you now have a camera lighting for your daughter.
That's right. At home. That's right. Thank you, Dakota.
Yes. All right. So, you know, I like to start off the podcast with asking people what their favorite foreign word is. So tell me.
Okay. So I have to give credit to my French teacher from high school. So, you know, if I didn't pick a French word, I think she'd be very disappointed in me. So Ms. Plowden, thank you very much. She really instilled a love for the culture. And I even went there on my honeymoon. I think the senior class went on a trip, and at that time I couldn't go and always wanted to. So I love the art and the history of France, and actually work for a manager who's French. So I think I had to pick a French phrase, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So my phrase is mon petit chou, which I think you did a little segment on recently. And the funny thing is, I was preparing for today's call, and I looked up the meaning of that word, which I always thought it meant my little cabbage. And I learned that it actually refers to, in the pastry world, it's a chou à la crème or something like that, or something with a cream puff, which makes more sense to me than French folks calling each other cabbages. So although there's a ton of little like postcards and things out there that you can find that are, you know, the cabbage reference. So I don't know. Now I question everything. Like, my whole existence is in question.
Yes, you don't know if you're a cream puff or a cabbage.
That's right. That's right. I have no idea.
Now, did you pop it into Google Translate?
No, I actually looked up the word mon petit chou, which I knew how to spell because of my wonderful French teacher.
Oh, that's great. And where did you look it up?
On Google. Yeah.
On Google. Oh, okay. So you looked it up on Google, but you didn't use Google Translate. So, I might have to go back and put it into Google Translate and find out what it actually, you know, what that says it means.
It says it means cabbage. Yeah. Cause the word chou means cabbage, but it's short for, I wrote it down. Chou à la crème. Yeah, that's right. So it's cream puff.
My petit chou is short for
crème. Chou à la crème.
Chou à la crème. Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, like I said, now I question everything.
All right. So was going to France your first international experience, or can you tell me what you remember as your first exposure to another culture, country, or language?
No, it wasn't. Actually, I managed trade show for a number of years. So I've been to Madrid, Spain. I've been to China. Shenzhen. Yeah. Shenzhen was where I've traveled to, and Hong Kong. And Paris was actually the last place I've been internationally. So after I got married and we kind of decided, hey, I'm going to stop traveling as much and be at home more. So.
And then the kids came along, and then they suck out your traveling budget.
Yeah. There's that.
Yeah, but it is, you know, traveling has gotten a lot more difficult, especially now it's non-existent. So what was your biggest shock in doing business international?
Well, I think China was the biggest difference. Like, you could definitely tell a difference in the culture, mainland China. You know, So that, I think that was the biggest shock, just the understanding how people live, how they, you know, commute to work and live in dorms in some areas to work for companies and manufacturers, and, you know, only travel home once or twice a month, that kind of thing. So that was different, you know, something that I didn't really have a full appreciation for before traveling internationally.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think your biggest fear was for doing international work? Because that was one of your first jobs, doing the trade shows, right?
Yeah, I think those things have changed over time. But I would say, you know, working now with a company that is more international, we have locations across the globe. We have 11 locations throughout the world. So, you know, just understanding what those different cultures require as far as communication, because that's what I'm here to do, is to communicate our products and our value. So making sure that the message conveys, which is where you guys really came into play.
Yeah, so why don't you talk a little bit about Conitec Sonoco and what you do, and then we'll jump a little bit into the project so people have an understanding. So what does, tell us about Conitec Sonoco.
So Conitec Sonoco falls under the industrial packaging or products sector of Sonoco Products Company. We have four divisions. We started off with our converting division, which is our cones and tubes that we manufacture. I have one to show you here. This is a cone and tube that are paper. And we manufacture these, and we have the yarn is twisted onto these for export, mainly out of the U.S. So we established in Gastonia, North Carolina in the 80s as a distributor to these textile companies. And then we began manufacturing these cones and tubes here. And we're the only manufacturer of cones in the U.S., but we also have our tube division, which Sonoco Products actually initially manufactured those as well. So back in 2018, we became fully acquired by Sonoco. Anyway, within our converting division, we also manufacture pallets, which kind of fell in line with exporting. We developed that corrugated pallet, so to be an export pallet for the textile companies in the area. And then we have our edge board is another product line that we manufacture, but that's mainly in outside of the U.S. for right now. So and then we have other divisions, our paper, which is our largest division. We have paper mills in China, in Spain, and then two in Indonesia. And we also have a flexible products division, and that is where we sell our bulk bags. The Bulk Sack is our brand of bulk bags, and we have other flexible products that we sell in that division. And then our fourth division, of course, is our adhesive division, and that's mainly to serve our winding facilities. And we also sell outside of the company some of those adhesive solutions.
Okay, so what I remember was that Sonoco had acquired a lot of companies around the world. So that's how you came up with the four different divisions?
Actually, Sonoco is a larger company. They have way more locations. I think there's over 65 global locations in the Sonoco company. So we're just a part of that global. We've just added on to their global locations.
Okay, so the four divisions are part of Conitex.
Yes.
And then Sonoco has all of, has a bunch of different. So the website we were working on was just Conitex.
Correct.
Right, but you were still made up of a lot of acquisitions around the world, right?
So it started off with our comb business, and then of course it made sense for us to open up paper mills to be able to internally use the paper grades that we needed for our cones. Our high-tech cone capabilities required a higher grade and higher performance paper. So we started manufacturing on paper, and then from there we, of course, formed a partnership with a company for our adhesive solutions. And then in the U.S., since we were so owned so much of the market share, we decided to diversify with our flexible products division. That's the Bulk Sack brand. So that's kind of where all of that evolved.
Okay, so you had a whole bunch of moving parts coming in to make the Conitex brand. And then a couple of years ago, somebody said, all right, Michelle, Department of One, you're going to clarify the message and clean up the website. So tell me how you went about thinking about that with the understanding that you had lots of languages and your fear was understanding cultures and languages and how to do that clearly.
Yeah, so I came on here in 2017, and I was hired on as an inbound marketing manager, which, you know, the initial thought was, hey, Michelle, come on board and let's start blogging and talking to our audience. And so I started to look at our website and realized there were several different websites. And then I started uncovering more and more websites that were, you know, all over the world. So for Conitex Sonoco, there was a website, you know, in Greece, and there was one in China and one in Taiwan, and, you know, just several different versions of the website. So the first task was to get everything on one URL in one place where we could find our voice and establish, you know, this is the message, this is our brand. So, you know, we had to kind of take a step back where I thought, okay, we're going to jump in blogging and developing content. We really had to set the framework. So I think that was another one of the biggest challenges, was understanding. I kept uncovering more and more products. So we have products that we offer in the US, and then we have products that we offer in Taiwan that may be completely different, or in China that may, you know, be in addition to what we do here. So at the end of the day, I think we came away with over 50 products that we offer, where I came into this understanding that maybe there were, you know, 20 or 25. So it was quite a discovery to start to understand the business a little bit more.
So by your deep diving into inbound, you figured out that the company had multiple messages in each of the countries, and that they were selling products that you didn't even, the company as a corporation didn't even know.
Well, the company knew about it, but me being a new person on board, you know, I started to learn more and more about the company as I went through the process of understanding each location. And I'll say, you know, there are probably people within our company here that didn't know we sold products, you know, that we now know and have published on our website. So
Everybody from the whole company can go there and access the resources or access the information on all the products where they might not have known if they were in the US and it was being sold in China.
Right. Yes.
Okay. So you start out, you think you're going to blog and figure out audience, and then you realize that you have to organize all the products and figure out the messages and pull it into one corporate website.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So what were your biggest challenges there?
Well, I think just communicating to the management team, you know, that this needed to be a step back. We needed to take a step back and really dive into this and develop our messaging, our look and feel, and put everything onto one area where we, you know. So the plan was to go from there and translate everything once we had all the product pages and all the messaging and everything laid out. So.
Okay. So you had to get senior management buy-in to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that can be quite difficult for a marketing person to do.
You know, I've had a great team. I think by them bringing me on, you know, in the beginning, they had an understanding of this is the direction that we want to go. This is a way for us to be more globally minded and more visible globally. So that was, I think, the intention all along. And, you know, they just trusted my, you know, instincts and really were willing to listen to and hear the strategy. And I think that they've been happy with some of the things we've been able to do.
Okay. That's fantastic. Cause a lot of times I'll hear some pushback from senior management and not under, so it sounds like they understood and that's why they brought you on. Okay. So you get, you know, everybody understanding that this is the way that you have to go. What's your next step then?
So then we just started building out the website, and you know, it just became a very large undertaking. So we involved several different key players within the company to kind of be responsible for their division and the information that they had to make it available to me as resources. And then I'm a spreadsheet person, so I organize everything in Excel. So I had this nice spreadsheet that I put together. You know, I had all of the different products and whether or not we offer it in this location. And then, of course, you know, whether it needed to be translated. It allowed me to understand what the translation requirements were, how to lay out the website and organize, you know, all the products. So that's kind of what took place there.
I tell you, that was beautiful from our side that you took the time and did that spreadsheet because it was so organized. We could clearly see the list of products, the pages that it went with, where they were sold, and what languages that you need. So it was, you know, we weren't struggling and having back and forth and not clear. So as the client coming in with that organized, that made it so much easier to bring that back to you. So we love that you love spreadsheets.
Thanks. I like them because it helps me with the math. I'm in marketing. I do analytics all the time, but, you know, I know how to do the formulas. But I don't have to do math in my mind. There's just, you know, there's no reason for that.
This was the organization. It wasn't really heavy duty math. It was just you think in an organized, logical manner, which is marketing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you did the spreadsheet. You get that all organized. What was the next step then?
Well, I'll kind of go into some lessons learned here a little bit. First thing we did was, okay, we've got everything in our marketing automation platform. We've got all the pages laid out. Everything is ready. So we thought we would use one of those plug and play translation services.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So here comes our lessons learned. So I'm not going to say who, but this company basically used machine translations, and then they had these part-time translators who went in and proofread, and then they would sit out, you know, the translation for that page. And luckily we got a couple of sample pages to kind of look at and understand what in the world it would look like once we put it in place. And I mean, it was poor quality. So we learned very quickly that it would not replace someone who had experience, you know, and had full-time people working for them and really understood the culture, you know, took it from a different perspective, not just, you know, spitting out translations, you know, it needed to be quality.
Now, did they tell you that it was going to be machine translation with a human editor, or did they tell you after the fact?
Well, it was after the fact. So, you know, we went in and set up everything. And then of course there were problems with, the integration with our marketing automation platform. Another difficulty with our product line, you know, our vast product line, is that every page had a different module or template. I'm sorry. So you couldn't really use the integration easily. And I think you had some experience with that when we started going through the process. You know, every single page was a different template. So it wasn't easy just to say, okay, here, you know, in this module, we'll plug in this text. Every page is different. So, you know, it really didn't work very well. And then on top of that, just the quality was terrible. It was terrible. So,
okay. So you did a couple test pages, which that's a really good thing to do. Test mm-hmm. the pages and have somebody look it over that you trust, if you've right. got, you know, the benefit of having internal people. Ends up terrible. What do you do next?
So then we start talking about, you know, what do we want to convey as a company? How do we want to designate our internal resources to this project? You know, what makes the most sense? What's the scale of this project? How time intensive will this be if we try to take this on internally versus having all of this handled through another company, translation company? So at that point, I reached out to our marketing agency, and they recommended Rapport for, you know, being a partner in this. They just raved about you guys and your capabilities, having met you at a recent trade show.
Yes.
So we started working, you know, with you at that time, and really felt like you had a full understanding and capabilities to do what we really needed for this project.
And how did, what was your experience? What did we do well? What could we have improved upon?
Oh man. You know, you guys did a great, I don't really know all the details of what happened behind the scenes. And I think that that's a huge, you know, nod to you and your team that, you know, you took care of everything. Working with our marketing agency really just was a great process. I know we had some snags. Both of us are going through this whole project. It was new for both of us because of the automation behind the scenes. You know, we had to kind of work with the company that provided our marketing automation because they didn't have a turnkey solution. So, you know, you guys took on a lot working with them to get the API, you know, working and to get all of the pieces and parts in place for this project. So I know that it was a journey for everyone, but I felt like you were capable and you were doing a great job. So I didn't worry so much. And that really speaks to the value of a partnership in translation services.
Oh, good. Well, that's so wonderful to hear, because we did hit some bumps along the way with those specific templates that were built out on each page, so the API wasn't reading it. Mm-hmm. So, but that's our commitment. And so I'm glad that it worked out and it was seamless to you. Yeah. So what do you think, like, what do you think were the biggest struggles you had along the way?
Well, I think, again, the whole thought process of, okay, well, this is going to be, translation is like an afterthought, and it should never be an afterthought. You should really go into this with a purposeful mindset, that not everyone speaks our language in the way that we communicate. Like, there need to be, regional colloquialisms taken into consideration, and how you're portraying yourself. Maybe, I think one of the translators was like, why are we portraying ourselves so weak? And it wasn't a matter of what we were saying, it was how it was translated. So, you know, that was one of those moments where you're like, okay, yeah, we need to look at this and make sure that we're saying this in a way that conveys the strength of our company. But it was just the culture. So it's just the word choice difference. So.
Oh, okay. And that was the translator said it weaker, and then the internal person picked up on that?
Yeah. So the translation from the English version didn't come across as strong as maybe that region would have said it, you know, said the messaging that we were trying to say. So, you know, making sure that we're conveying the same meaning, but in the right light, I guess.
Okay. Do you remember what country that was?
That was Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So Taiwan would have used a stronger message on self-promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And right. It was written softer. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I hear a lot of differences more in the German and maybe Scandinavian, where they tend to list more features. I want the stats. I want the features. And they say when they come into the United States, they have to tell more stories and talk more benefits. Mm. So interesting to hear the difference here, where the U.S. is actually soft pedaling.
Right.
In Taiwan, right. They want it stronger. So it's so right. Funny, the little differences. Yes. Yeah, so talk about your internal review, who you had do that, because we think of reviews. It's just like in English, you're going to have an editor and you're going to have reviews, so you feel comfortable with it. So if companies ever want to have an internal review, we like to know and give, you know, keep the final copy, and then we can agree or disagree and explain to you why. So you did have internal reviews. So can you tell us some more about that?
We did. We had, typically it was the general manager for the region, for the language that we chose. So we had a little bit of a challenge with the Spanish translation, because we did simplified Chinese, and then we did simplified Spanish, right? So
a global Spanish.
Global Spanish, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we had our manager in our Mexico office. He, you know, did all of the review and made sure everything was correct. But then if you were to send the same translations over to our offices in Spain, you know, we didn't want to have differences. So we stuck with one. And we explained, okay, we're trying to make this a global version of Spanish. So I think at one point we had, you know, several red lines on a translation. And when I saw this come back, I was like, okay, maybe I didn't explain well enough that this needs to be, you know, this is a global version of the language. So once they understood that, they're okay.
Oh, so then they didn't try to localize it to the market, and so the review could be better. What advice would you give to somebody reviewing a global translation?
You mean the, for example, for the manager who had to undertake this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you've got a translation. You think it's done by a good translation agency. Oftentimes we see the local people really try to drastically change it or try to put local colloquialisms or, you know, their wording around it. And mm-hmm. it might even change the grammar. So you manage those internal reviews and have sat in the midst of that process. So I'm kind of curious as to, like, if you went through that again, mm-hmm. what would you tell your country managers about reviewing the translation?
I think I'd ask them to speak to the, like, the Spanish counterpart and speak to them to make sure they're on the same page. If they have a huge question about the way that certain translations are coming across, there is specific product knowledge in this industry. So, you know, there was terminology that we provided that even the translator didn't really know. And that's okay because, you know, I don't really understand all of the terminology that we have internally with this industry. So there are going to be questions there. But I think if you bounce the ideas off of someone who understands the industry, who speaks the global language, you know, whether they be in Spain or in Mexico, they'd be able to, you know, talk together to come to a decision on certain terms or phrases. So what we actually ended up doing was, you know, we came up with our, we had a list of common industry phrases and terms, and we sent those to both our Spain location and our Mexico location for review before we turn those over to you guys.
Oh, okay. So you developed a glossary mm-hmm. by sending it to both of them and had them agree to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct. That's correct. Uh-huh. But then, you know, it took some time between that process and then the translations coming back before they reviewed it. So, you know, by the time they went to review it again, or for the first time, they didn't remember, oh yeah, we went through this process before and kind of agreed to these terms. So
including the glossary with the review might have been helpful.
That's probably what
a suggestion. Okay. Yeah. What else would you say to anybody who was reviewing?
I think just to keep a mindset on being global, being understood globally. If you're thinking about something you would say, maybe in a town hall meeting at your location that you maybe wouldn't say, in a certain way on, a conference call with, you know, your managers in other countries, because of the difference in understanding the, you know, the meaning of what you're saying, just to, you know, keep an eye on that as you're going through the translations.
Okay. Anything else that you'd recommend?
I guess, you know, not to expect perfection, especially in a technical translation of something that you have specific knowledge on, to be, you know, understanding of everyone's strengths and weaknesses. And I guess because we use people who were so involved in and had a technical understanding of everything and pretty much eat, sleep, and breathe our products, you know, they might be less understanding of someone who doesn't speak the same, you know, technical language. So,
which brings up a whole interesting thing, because even in marketing, when you're putting it out on your website, you don't write it in technical terminology. You're writing it to be understood.
Right.
Until you get to the very technical decisions, which is later down the sales process.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Okay. So you could see some of the country managers who are really on the technical deep knowledge side trying to change some of the translations to go more that direction.
Right, right. Exactly.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point. These are some that I hadn't thought about it. It's just looking at it from a different angle. Is there anything else?
Not that I can think of offhand.
Okay. Okay. Those are really, really good points. So I appreciate that. Budget. How did you go about establishing a budget for that or coming up? Like they knew, you know, senior management knew that you had to consolidate the websites and start the inbound marketing or the social marketing. How would you even think about translation or developing it for this?
Well, I think what we wanted to do was make sure we had quality translations. So, you know, where we started with you guys was, hey, can you translate the whole website, everything on it, and, you know, every single piece of it? And you guys went through, kind of took a look and came back with an idea of what that would cost us. And then we said, okay, well, maybe we can take this in pieces and really just do the pages that where we have product lines in those areas, because that excluded a lot of different regions. So we don't offer certain products in other countries. So we really didn't need to advertise and talk about those for those areas. So right. That's kind of where we backed into our number, really, was this is what we want. We want a good quality translation. So this is where we need to kind of move pieces and parts to make that happen. So that's kind of the direction that we took.
And do you think that's working for you to have just the country-specific pages or language-specific for products that you offer in those countries? Or do you wish you had the whole website translated?
I think it works for us. Currently the way we have our website set up. So, you know, we have the selector. So if you're looking at a product line, it'll say these products are available in your region. You just choose your region. So I think it does work. So I think I'd do it the same way, to make sure that we got the quality translations we wanted.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a very, very good way to do it, you know, because we've had other clients that will call in and start with the whole website. And then we find out they're only selling certain products in the target countries that they were doing. And so you put in about us and ordering way and the product specific pages. I think it's very, very effective. And then you can track the business that you get coming in from there. So I'm glad to hear that work for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious on what you see internationally, with the buyer's process or the buyer's journey. Do you see people in the United States going through the same buyer's journey as you might see them going through internationally?
I think it depends on the product line, but, I'll say for our textile carriers, which would be our cones and paper cones and tubes. Yes, I think the process is that they come in through the website, and that was the whole point of the marketing automation setup, was to make sure we had a smooth and seamless way for the buyer to come in and convert and then be put in contact with the appropriate person. So, you know, they come in through the website, through a form, and then it's sent to the regional territory manager. And then someone reaches out from their regional office to follow up and get more information from, usually we have to have a sample of the cone or tube that they need if we don't already do business with them. Or if they're setting up a new operation, you know, we take a whole different approach. So we just do it as they come in. We determine how that will be handled.
Okay. So you really are driving leads through your website and then distributing them to the sales force in the region.
Yes.
Now what happens if you get an inquiry in a language where you don't have somebody in a region that speaks that language?
We have people, I mean, we, for all of the languages that we have had translated, we have people in the regions where they can reach out and speak to them. I know that we had one contact that was covering all of EMEA, you know, so I'm sure that they run into issues where the contact maybe doesn't speak their language, but it seems to be English is a substitute, you know, for the language that, so usually people will know English and they'll be able to speak, you know, meet halfway there.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you're not getting inquiries from languages that you're not providing. They'll switch into English. So, yeah.
Well, sometimes I have inquiries that come in the language that, of the country, regions where they're located, and it's not offered on our website. Is that, okay. Was that your question?
Let's just clarify for everybody. What languages is your website in?
Okay, so obviously English, Spanish, simplified Chinese, and Bahasan, Indonesian.
For Indonesia, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens if somebody speaks Japanese?
So we I would forward that to one of our in-country managers in China. And then she would reach out to them and speak with them.
In English, or she has somebody that speaks Japanese, or you don't know at this point?
I think it's English. I think she'll reach out and speak to them in English.
Interesting.
But I don't know that I've had anything from Japan. I'll have to think about that.
Okay. And so what would you do if you have that situation? Somebody reaches out in Japanese and nobody in the China office speaks Japanese and they don't speak English.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I, you know, we have a pretty diverse employee base in all of our locations. We employ tons of different cultures and individuals from different countries, even here in the U.S. So I'd be surprised if we didn't have someone either internally here within Conitec Sunoco or within Sunoco corporate who speak the language, who'd be able to kind of step in and help.
Okay. So there's some sort of internal communications where you could say, hey, does anybody or a salesperson might know who in the company could speak that?
Yeah, I believe that would be, I really haven't run into that though. So we've had the capability to interact with anyone who's come across our website. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. What some companies do is have telephone interpreting. So if there's a call that comes in, they can just within 20 seconds get somebody on the line that can facilitate that conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is that with the inbound approach, you get their email address and you can do a lot by email as well, and especially with the different time zones. You know, when I get an email from someone at 3 a.m. I know it's an international, you know, email. So, you know, you can do a lot through written text that, you know, would allow us to kind of facilitate those types of inquiries as well.
Yeah. Are they mostly in English or do you use Google Translate, machine translation at that point to get the gist of what you need to say?
Yeah. I don't respond to the ones that come in that I don't, just because I'm afraid I will say something wrong, you know, through a machine translation. So I will translate it so that I understand what they're asking for, and then I'll send the appropriate contact for that region.
Oh, good for you. That's even a smarter way to do it, is figure out what language it is, because you can identify the language, see what they're asking about, and then give it to the right person who has the language and product expertise.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's even more perfect. I hear of people using Google Translate to reply to the message, and I worry about that for liability, but just for your own, get the gist of it, that's perfect. Yeah.
Right.
Any mistakes or danger areas that you'd like to point out to people as they are doing global marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to have just an appreciation for the different cultures and what may be happening in that different country, politically, as well as, you know, just everyday life. We don't all communicate the same way, don't appreciate the same things. We don't have the same values. So just making sure you don't assume everyone has an American mindset, and lives the same way, has the same privileges. So
how do you navigate through that? Like, you can assume that we're going to be different, but then how do you figure out how to be sensitive and adapt to that?
Yeah, I think that and it's probably a lot easier for a manufacturing company who markets products. You can focus on, you know, what your product does for an industry, because you know that. We go to international shows. We keep an ear to the ground as far as to, you know, how our products benefit the end user. So keeping a focus on those types of struggles, because, you know, everyone faces those types of struggles if they're using the same type of equipment, doing the same processes. So I think that that's the easiest way for a manufacturer to kind of focus away from anything political or anything, you know, cultural, and to really just talk about the buyer and what they're doing in their day-to-day jobs.
Okay. So really keep it on business and day-to-day and the activity and work, rather than getting into that other.
Yeah, I think so. Unless, you know, you have a resource in the country that you can talk to and add in some of those other aspects. But I would say to do the homework, don't just, you know, assume that everyone's the same.
Right, right. Yeah, those are really good points. And it's interesting to hear different people's perspective on how you go about learning that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's good advice, to focus on the work and the solutions and the issues there. Yeah. All right. So now we're going to switch over to some personal stuff about you.
Oh boy.
All, of course, having to do with global. Favorite vacation, global or travel? It could be here in the U.S.
It has to be our honeymoon to Paris. I mean, that was phenomenal. You know, just, I don't think we stopped walking for the week. 5 days we were there. We were.
You must have sat down at a cafe.
Briefly. Yeah.
Oh, that is great. And how about your most rewarding cross-cultural experience?
I think, again, going into mainland China and seeing the industrial sector made me have an appreciation for the things that we have here in the U.S. And, you know, I think we take it for granted, you know, that we have so many things.
Like what?
Well, for example, you know, they have rolling blackouts. So, you know, the production shuts down for the day and they can't, you know, work the hours that they were there to put in. When that happens, I did have a greater appreciation for some of the lean practices. So I was able to see in the manufacturing environment that I visited, they had, you know, everything set up where it's supposed to be, the little outlines of this piece of equipment goes in this spot. And, you know, it was just amazing, the pride of the work that's put in and how they do those things. It's interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved China when I was there. I mean, I was blown away just by the number of people that they move through the country on a daily basis, trains and airports, and, you know, their logistics and planning are way beyond anything we have here just because of the sheer numbers of people. So the efficiency in manufacturing. What's your favorite place to do business?
My favorite place to do business, as in their location?
Yeah, location or culture, yeah.
Well, I've had interesting experiences with different places. So, you know, managing trade shows, you have to rely on the local unions and the local way of doing things. So I learned, like, if I were having a show in Italy, you know, do not follow up 500 times to find out where this order is for they're going to get to it eventually. Like, don't sweat about it. Like, you have to kind of take a different approach. So Germany, I love doing the shows in Germany because they're so efficient, so organized. You know, I have German blood, so I'm a little bit the same mentality. Like, I want to see where everything is. So
you got your Excel spreadsheet and it's all planned out, so you want to know.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, managing a show in Germany was always, you know, smooth sailing. So,
Okay. And how about your craziest adventure with doing business internationally?
Yeah, I'm still going to go back to China because I am pretty tall and I have this red hair. So I stuck out like a sore thumb in China. But people had mixed, you know, reactions. So I, you know, would have people poke their heads out of, you know, the crowd, and they'd say hello, and then they'd laugh, and I would smile and say hello. And then, you know, at one point I was in mainland China. It was just me and a local employee of the company. And someone was saying something. I don't know if they were yelling, but I asked the employee what they were saying, and they were like, oh, they're yelling foreigner. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. It was a little weird.
Was it threatening or just out of curiosity? They were yelling it because they were so curious, or?
I think they were curious.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness, look at, there's a foreigner. Like okay. and then I had two in Hong Kong. I had two ladies, I think they must have been visiting Hong Kong for the weekend, and from mainland. And they came up to me and they had this little scrap of paper that I think that one of them had pulled out of their purse. And they were, they asked me a few questions, like, you know, have you enjoyed your stay here? What's your favorite shop? And I was like, oh, you know, it was nice. And then the third question was, can we take our picture with you? So I'm like, okay.
And
yeah,
then
that's fine.
And son, and then take the picture. Exactly. So 1, 2, 3. Did you hear that all the time? Son?
Yes. Yeah. I think I do remember that. Yeah. So it was just interesting.
Just cultural difference with interacting with somebody who's so different. Here we kind of stare or give a wide berth, but there they're much more engaging and openly curious.
Exactly.
Yeah. In a friendly way, I found.
Yeah, very friendly. Yeah.
So any recommendations for resources or access to information on doing global business or global marketing? What do you refer to?
Yeah, I really leaned a lot on our marketing agency because I trusted their experience. And I think that doing your research, I made sure to work with someone who was a certified partner. That's important, you know.
For HubSpot?
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Someone who understands inbound marketing because it's a different approach to from the traditional ways of marketing. So, you know, having someone that understands that. So I think, you know, calling the references and making sure that you're working with a company who has good credibility, you know. Mm-hmm. So there are a few books that I've read too, but I'm terrible about remembering off the cuff.
Yes.
I have to go look them up. But, you know, there are good books out there to kind of.
Is this for inbound or is this for global marketing?
For global marketing.
Okay.
There are some good, and I'll send them over. Maybe you can reference them.
Sure.
You know,
we'll put that in the write-up in the of what we're talking about. Yeah.
So those have been good.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what they are because I just wrote the last chapter in the book I'm writing about global marketing. So
okay,
should be published by the end of the year. So I'd like to see what other books are out there that you referred to because I didn't find many that weren't textbooks.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I do have one, and it's probably at my desk right now. So right, I'll grab it.
Okay. Well, and you can let me know and we'll add it into the notes because that'll be a good resource. All right. And how can people find you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, just check our website out. It's connotex.com. You can reach me at info@connotex.com. And our blogs, you know, we update that regularly with new articles and information. So check us out.
Yeah, I think it's a hot company to learn about right now as more people are doing inbound marketing and shipping more internationally. You've got very creative packaging and adhesives that can help out with that.
We do. Our products are high quality. So we have our internal engineering staff, that packaging engineers who, you know, make sure that everything will work as it should. So
now, good. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing all the information that you did. And it's been fun to kind of circle back to the process of when we were working together about a year ago on doing your website.
Thank you for having me. You guys have done a phenomenal job for us and we're very happy with everything you've done. Your team is great to work with.
I love hearing that. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Global Marketing Podcast. If you learned something today or you laughed or you want to hear Michelle again, you can find us on all the places that you listen to podcasts. So we'll see you next time in the next episode.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.